this week, I read this tragic news about a family. And I quote, "With great sorrow, we share that World Venture, it's a mission agency, appointees, their missionaries, Jameson Catherine Powell, both 29 years old, along with their three children, Ezra, 3 years old, Violet, 23 months old, and Kelvin, 2.5 months old, were killed in a multi-vehicle crash on Sunday, July 31st, just 2 Sundays ago. The Powells were traveling in their van from Minnesota to Colorado to participate in their final training before deploying to serve as missionaries in Japan, when their van was struck by a semi-trailer truck in Nebraska. All five of them gone in one moment. I found a blog that Jameson had kept of his journey of being called into Japan and what a struggle it was for him to accept that call and then to convince his wife, Catherine, of his journey of being called into Japan. He called it the second proposal. And learning also how to raise children in a foreign country where their blonde heads will stick out. All of their waiting, fundraising, prayers, decisions, convictions, and finally with just 2 months left to leave for Japan. They were supposed to go in October. This tragedy struck. How do you explain it? I hesitated to share this story with you because I, upon learning about it and reading these blogs and finding out more about this family, I struggled mightily with it myself. It shocked me at first, and then it depressed me. And I didn't even know the family. But perhaps because we have just come back from the mission field and have met many missionaries, this hit really close to home. And this is hard, if not impossible, to understand. The first question is, why? Why would God allow this to happen to this family? This was a good, excellent family, totally devoted to serving God in a most radical way. And this doesn't make sense. What about the promise? God works all things for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose. God works all things for the good of those who love Him. Well, didn't this family love God? It seemed like they did, looking at their blog. And weren't they called for God's purpose? Absolutely. Not only they were called as Christians, but they were called as missionaries to go into Japan. So they were called and they loved God. And God promised that God works all things for the good of those who love Him and called according to His purpose. And these people meet that criteria. And yet, what happened to them? Where is the good in this? Did God fail in His promise, in keeping His promise? Did God say, oops, I didn't see that coming? Oh, that wasn't meant to happen. I dropped the ball on that one. Is that what happened? Or was it in the purpose of God that this happened? Last week we said that if you define the good, God works all things for the good. If you define good as what happens in this world, health, wealth, and prosperity. If that's what it is, if that's your definition of the good, then this does not make any sense. Because their lives are snuffed away. And they were just little babies. What about the little children? They didn't even have a chance at life. And God just took them all in one moment. Instantly, a ball of fire, because the van caught fire as soon as it was struck. God took them. Where is the good in that? And we said last week, the ultimate good, the good that God is trying to bring to us is the ultimate good, right? Which is His Son, Jesus Christ. It's not a thing, it's not an event, it's not a circumstance that God gives us, but it's a person that God gives to us, which is His Son, Jesus Christ. And that good was brought to them instantly. They went up to heaven and met Christ face to face. I'd rather have you be with me than not. I know your purpose was for Japan, but really your purpose was for me. Now I have you here, and that is good. have to have that kind of understanding of the good, or such an event does not make any sense. So last week, we said we can trust God because God in His love always does what is best for us. Well, today, we will talk about trusting God because of God's wisdom. God's love, today God's wisdom, and the next time God's sovereignty, that He's in control. The main point of today's message is this: God in His wisdom always knows what is best for us. God in His wisdom and knowledge always knows what is best for us. So for Paul's family, what happened two Sundays ago is what was best for them. Yes, instantaneous death, but that was what was best for them. God, in His infinite wisdom, assessed all the information that you and I are not privy to, that we don't understand why this would happen to a family like that. But God knows what we don't know. Assessing all that information, He determined that this was what was best for that family, including the little children. But for us, we still struggle. Theologically, maybe mentally, okay, yes, it could happen, and we've seen it happen, but emotionally, we struggle with this. But when we look at the Bible, we realize that there are people that struggle with this just as much, if not more. And today, we want to delve into a person named Job that we all heard about, his agony, and how God's wisdom was shown through his life. What are we to do with the information that we just heard, such as the powers and the tragedies that happen around us? How does God's wisdom to do what is always good for us go with these unexplainable happenings? Job. Let me give you a little background. Job was an Old Testament character, and there are, I believe, 40-some chapters in that book. It's a rather long book. And as you know, Job is one of the persons that suffered mightily. And he was a good man, the Bible says. He was a good, God-fearing man. But one day, this good, God-fearing man lost all 10 of his children in an act of God while they were gathered and they were enjoying each other's company. They loved the brotherhood and sisterhood so much among the siblings, and they just went from house to house, just really partying in a good way, I'm sure, a godly way, enjoying each other's company, and then the roof just caved in, and then they all died. One sitting. Many days, weeks, perhaps years of depression and questioning ensued for Job, as you can understand. And he is not this robotic, this stoic, oh, well, praise be God. God knows what He's doing. This was all in the will of God. I know that God knows what's best, and this is for the best. So I'm simply going to trust Him. That's not what he did. For almost 38 chapters, he rants. He goes on and on and on about the tragic event that just took place. You know, Rob, you and I can read about the agony that he felt, the regrets, for example, of being born, even. He says, it would have been better if I had never been born, that my mother and father rejoiced on the day that I was born, but it was the start of the day of my grief, he says. The devastation that he felt, and he felt cursed, that he felt cursed by God. He cursed the day that he came into the world. And if it were not sin for him to commit suicide, I think he would have done it. That he was thinking about ending his life. Such utter devastation and anguish. And the friends who came to console him, he had friends who came upon hearing this tragedy. Did they make it better? No, they did not. They actually made it worse. They said stuff like, the stuff that you should never say when you go to a funeral, right? Stuff like, well, if you had acted better, if you had truly loved God, there must be something in your life that God did not find pleasing, and that's why God punished you. Wrong thing to say, and that's what they were saying. Right? Oh, you better repent now, Job, because if you don't, something worse will happen to you. Well, what can be worse than losing all 10 of your children, losing your health, and having all of your assets be ruined? But that's what they were saying. Something worse will happen to you if you do not repent, Job. Right? It's your fault. Because if you had truly been good, this would not have happened to you. Or, they're in a better place, Job. Don't worry about them. We think that helps, it doesn't. To a person who just went through that tragedy. The question in Job's mind and the reader's mind is this. Why? Why did God allow this to happen to a good, God-honoring, God-fearing man like Job and then the prophets? What is going on? What is God really trying to do? Now, you and I know, who read the book of Job, know that there was a side story, right? In the beginning, there was a wager between God and Satan. And so we think that's kind of the reason. That's something that Job doesn't have the information to, right? He doesn't know that. But we know that because the Bible tells us that God somehow, well, Satan came up to Job, and Satan came up to God and said, well, Job, your servant, right? Your goody two-shoe. Well, he's only good because you have blessed him. Why don't you take everything away, and then once everything is taken away, he's going to curse you at your face. And God said, you're wrong, right? I give you permission to take away everything except his life. And that's exactly what Satan did. So we think, oh, that's kind of the reason why this is happening, but there's so much more to it than what meets the eye. And I don't think the Bible is meant to tell us all of why God allowed Satan and God engaged in that wager. The Bible does not tell us all of this. The Bible simply tells us what happened and what took place right before the tragedy struck Job, but it doesn't tell us the reason, actual reason, essence of why this happened. It simply does not explain. And in it, we are to sift out, that we are to derive out what God is trying to speak to us regarding his wisdom and about trusting him, even though we may not understand everything that is going on. So let me share with you three things regarding God's wisdom. God's infinite wisdom means at least three things that I could derive out of the text. And number one, it means that God's knowledge is full and complete. Therefore, he always makes the right decision. God's knowledge is complete and full. There is not a thing that he does not know. There is not a thing that he does not consider. Not only does he know what happened in the past, not only does he know what is happening in the present, he also knows all the possible situations and scenarios in the future. And he puts all of that together and makes the decision. So he makes a perfect decision every single time. He has no blind spot. One pastor said this about God's wisdom. There are no upgrades to his wisdom that are needed or even available. God is constantly synthesizing billions and billions of strands of data drawn from all possible fields of knowledge and realms of experience so that he holds every relevant factor in every situation with total and perfect knowledge. He constantly weighs the facts, implications, costs, consequences, and how it fits into his purposes with flawless skill so that what he does or wills is always the best possible move that can be made. And God does this all the time without the least strain and without crashing the hard drive. So he is not like you and me in this regard. He is utterly different than you and me. There are some parts of God that, yes, we should emulate and we want to be like, but this is a part that we can never be like, and that is his infinite wisdom, that he has full knowledge of everything that is going on and everything that is possible to go on. But we are not like that, are we? I know that I am not like that. Knowing that I got many, many blind spots around me, that I try to surround myself as a pastor with people that are better than me, people that are smarter than me, people that are more spiritually mature than me, people that can discern other people better than me because I'm so horrible at that. And that's what we do. And there are so many of you that are better than me in that way, which I thank and praise God for. But God does not need to do that. God does not seek counsel. He does not get his best angel, right? And then let's have a table talk here. This is what's going on. What do you think we should do? Okay, well, angel, well, Michael, what do you think, right? Or Gabriel, well, what do you think, right? He doesn't do that. He does not consult anyone. He doesn't need to because he has full, absolute, complete knowledge. and he synthesizes all of it and makes the right decision every single time. It's hard for us to understand how God operates in that way because you and I are not pleading to that. We don't have enough information, right? And because of that, we often misjudge or we make mistakes about certain facts or certain things, right? How many of you had this experience while you're watching, say, a court trial proceedings on TV or you're reading about it, right? It's an important case, and there have been several important cases regarding O.J. Simpson or murder case, you know, with the little girl and so on, right? And as you're watching, the defendant is sitting there, and then the prosecution lawyer gets up, and then he just lines up all these evidence after evidence and after evidence, right? And then you think, after hearing the prosecution lawyer, what are you thinking? Oh, he's guilty. He needs to be fried, right? Oh, airtight, right? Just book him. And then the defense attorney gets up, and then he presents a completely different view, and then he presents his own evidence, and then argument that actually would thwart what the prosecution lawyer said. And after hearing the defense lawyer, what are you thinking now? Oh, he's completely innocent, right? That wasn't him, it was somebody else. You got the wrong man here, right? Let him go free. So just 10 minutes ago, you were like, fry him, right? He's done it. And now 10 minutes later, let him go free, right? And then the prosecution lawyer gets up and then he presents more evidence, more witnesses, right? And then, wow, what about that? Right? And then the defense attorney gets up and then he presents more evidence and things like that. And says, whoa! And after you hear the whole case, what are you thinking? I don't know what's going on. I don't know whether he's guilty or not, right? I don't know what the truth is. I don't know who to believe. That is the whole point. We don't know. Who knows? God knows. God knows exactly what took place. And God not only knows what happened, but God also knows why it happened. God not only knows the actions, but he also knows the intentions. Why he did what he did. Not only who did it, but why he did or why she did what she did. God has all of that information, and he makes decisions upon that absolute knowledge. So the decision that he makes is the absolutely right one every single time. And that, I believe, is what Job came to understand. After God drills him with questions that he never even considered, Job realizes God's wisdom is so much beyond him that there are things that he never even considered, that his eyes were open, at least to the things that he never even considered, that God knows. And so he understands now that, oh, it wasn't because God wasn't thinking of it. Oh, it didn't happen while God was not looking. God knows all these things, and yet he allowed it to happen. And I still don't understand why he allowed it to happen, too. This happened to my family, but you know what? I understand now that God understands. God knows that his decision is the correct one. I believe that's what Job came to. As he says in Job 42:3, therefore, I have uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. So for 39 chapters, he was complaining, asking, why, God, why did this happen? What about this? What about that? You have no case against me on this one. I am right, you're wrong, right? And then God shows up and then says, did you think about this? What about this? What about that? What about that? Right? And Job goes, I never even thought about it. Now I understand that your knowledge is so much fuller and that you understand this case, my case, so much better than I do. I can trust you. I can trust you. Job realized the tragedy in his life happened not because God didn't know about it, nor God hasn't thought about it, but knowing all of that, God allowed it to happen. And he decides that he's not trusting. So number one thing that we need to know about God's wisdom is that God's knowledge is full and complete, therefore he always makes the right decision. Number two, it will seem, God's wisdom will seem foolish to the world. God's wisdom will seem foolish to the world. How is Job losing? Okay, listen to this. How is Job losing all of his children, his wealth, and his health? How is that good for him? Because that's the argument essentially I'm making, right? That this was for Job's good. Him losing his children, him losing his house. His wife telling him to curse God and die. All of that was really from Job's good. That's the argument that I'm making. But you say that to anybody who does not believe in God, and they will think, what? You don't understand the definition of good then, right? You and I have a very, very different understanding of what good is. That we don't call that good. We call that curse. We call that evil. We don't want that happening to us. And you're trying to redefine what good is. And so God's wisdom, because he did it in his wisdom, when it works out, it will seem like nonsense to the people who do not know, who do not believe. It's foolishness to those who do not know God. So in 1 Corinthians 1:27, it says, but God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, even things that are not, to bring to nothing things that are. And you know what it is, guys? That's God's way. That's how God works. God uses foolish things. God uses lowly things. God uses undesirable things to make foolish things out of the world's values. And then, and that's how God employs his method almost every single time. When Job went through this tragedy, God's wisdom is saying, I know that everybody's jeering at you. Everybody thinks that it's a curse, but I'm going to turn it into a blessing. You'll see. That's how God's wisdom works. This means if you're operating by God's method, the world will call it foolish. If I am operating by God's will, then the world will call us foolish. They will think we are crazy for the kind of decisions that we will make. They will shake their heads and ask, why? Well, why did you give up like that job again? What? So that you can go to Japan? What's wrong with you? Right? Why? You're giving how much money? What? Like, you're barely living, right? And you're going to give that money to who? Why? Are you crazy? Are you nuts? Right? Why would you go to a church like that? That's weird. Right? There's a church that is just like you, right here. Why go to such a church? Why begin at such a church? Are you out of your mind? Why would you sacrifice yourself that way? Why would you spend time on those people? Why would you leave your comfortable home in Minnesota and take your three young children to a completely foreign nation? Because I'm sure what the pals heard many times. What would you gain in the end by doing that? Is really the question. And what would you gain in the end by doing those crazy things? What would we gain as one? In the end, you would gain more of the ultimate treasure. You would gain more of Jesus. That's what it is. And the world will call it foolish. The world actually called Jesus foolish for what he has done. The most foolish thing ever. What is that? And that is a thing that we boast in the most as Christians. The cross. The cross was a foolish, foolish thing. 1 Corinthians 1:18. For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. Why is it foolishness? God is God, the commander-in-chief. He could have called 10,000 angels, and one angel could have just wiped out the earth. He had that kind of power, strength, authority, and yet he decides that he's going to go to the cross and die. How foolish is that? Imagine if the United States was to go to war with North Korea. Right? We can wipe them out like in 10 minutes, really, with all of our firepower. But we said, you know what, we surrender. That's our way. We surrender to you, and we're going to come under your regime. What? What are you doing? Doesn't make sense. And yet that's what God did. That was Jesus' way, the most foolish way, the cross. And that's how he does things consistently. And that is his wisdom. Jesus left perfect happiness with his Father in heaven and came to become one of us. But that was God's wisdom. So God delights to use a lowly, plain, unremarkable people for his purpose. That's God's wisdom. Many of us are feeling that way, right? Look at ourselves in the mirror, compare ourselves with other people, and we feel so lowly, lonely. God can't use me. I'm nothing. God consistently used those type of people. So have confidence in your weakness. Have confidence in your weakness. Volunteer to mess up. Volunteer to mess up. All right? Amen? When LD and I started this church about 6 years ago, you know what? This probably is not going to work. Why the heck not just try it? Right? Let's just go try it. If we fail, oh well. You know, at least we try. Volunteer to mess up. But at least we have given that opportunity to God. Thirdly, lastly, God's wisdom means this. His absolute, sovereign, infinite wisdom means that he won't explain things to us. And this is the hardest one. He won't explain why. And this kills me, right? This kills you. God never explained to Job why what happened to Job happened. One of the most troublesome questions about God is a question. Okay, when you're trying to witness to somebody, here's one question that will stump you almost every time. Well, you're a Christian, right? And you said your God is a loving God. Yes, God is a loving God. Then why is he letting bad things happen, right, in this world? If you have a good God, good loving God, then why are you all these tragedies happening in life? And you're like, don't know where to go with that, right? Well, he does. He absolutely does. And you know what? That's a question that Job has been asking for 39 chapters. Right? I cursed the day, right? I've been good, right? I thought I was a righteous man. Maybe not, but my conscience is clear. And yet this happened. I don't understand. I cursed the day that I was born. Why would you let this happen? God, I know that you're there, but you're silent. You're not even listening to me. Where are you, right? Explain to me. If I could have you sitting in front of me, I'll argue with you that there's no justice in this, that I know I'm right in this one. On and on and on he goes for 39 chapters, and he banters with his friends, going back and forth and back and forth. And you know what happens, though, right? God appears. God appears before Job, and God actually gives him an answer. And when I first came across this chapter 39 and 40, I'm like, oh my goodness, God's going to answer the very ultimate question of why is God a good God letting bad things happen to good people, right? Here's the answer. And so I'm listening, right? I'm like looking at it. It's like, what's the answer, right? So I can tell my unbelieving friends, like, this is the answer and this is why. You know what God does? God doesn't answer it. As a matter of fact, so frustrating. God actually asked Job questions. He asked Job question after question after question. For example, Job, do you know how I put the universe together? What? Like, Job, do you know the mysteries of the deep ocean that you have never plumbed the depth of? Job, do you know that there are creatures that you never even knew that existed, that I created and that I enjoy without anybody knowing of their existence? Job, did you know that there are mountains, goats that go from rock to rock and they never fall? And we don't know, you don't know how they do that. All the mysteries, all the intricacies. What about the intricacies of the constellation and their attributes and how they shift and what if they were to shift and what would happen to the earth? Have you considered all those things, Job? Do you know? And Job doesn't know. And all he can say is Job 44, behold, I'm of small account. What shall I answer to you, God? I lay my hand on my mouth. In other words, I'll shut up now. Right? God, why did you let this happen? God, what about this tragedy? You have no reason to let this happen. If you're a good God, how can this happen? And God goes, do you know this? Do you know that? Do you know this? Have you even considered this? And Job says, I'll shut up now. Here is what God is really saying. Here is what God is really saying by asking him question after question. This is what God is saying to Job and to every tragedy in our lives. And that is this. Job, I know far more than you. It was in my wisdom. It was in my love I let this happen. And Job, even if I tried to explain it to you, you wouldn't understand. You just don't have the capacity to understand. Things that you have never considered, never even would occur to you, went into this decision making. Don't. At this point, don't try to understand this. Just trust my wisdom. I love you. I'll do what is good for you. trust me. Go with me in this way. This is really tough to swallow for us independent Americans. Because why? We want to be the one making the decision, right? You tell us why, and I will determine for myself whether it was good for me or not. Don't tell me to just follow you, because I want to know exactly where I'm going, and if I don't like where I'm going, I don't want to go there. Let me be the one who's making the decision in this. That's American independence. And a lot of times, that's how we work as Christians as well. So many young people are asking God for God's will. God, what is your will for my life? And a lot of times, if God seems to be telling that person, you know what that person does? It's not that, oh, God, you tell me your will and I'll obey it. It's more, God, you tell me your will. And then I'll think about it. And if I like it, I'll go. If I don't like it, then I'll do something else. In other words, God, tell me your will so that I'll think about it and I'll choose my own. I just want to know, right, what you think is the best way for me. But I will determine for myself in the end because I am the ultimate determiner. And guess what Adam's sin was? Eve's sin was. The original sin was exactly that. God said, do not eat that, because it's good for you, not for you not to eat that. And Adam and Eve said, I'll be the judge of that. I'll be the judge of that. I will be the self-determiner. I make the choice. I call the shots. That's still what we do. That's still what we do. God is saying, no, I won't tell you. I won't tell you all the reasons. You trust me. You trust in my wisdom. You trust in my love. You trust in my sovereign control. I will do what is good for you. This too was done for your own good. You can't see that. That is what God is saying. So in conclusion, accepting the statement, and this was the main point of the message, accepting the statement, God in his wisdom always knows what is best for us, means this. You know what? I'm so ashamed to admit that this realization came to me just maybe 3 weeks ago for the first time. I don't know why. Yeah, I'm so slow. And that is this realization. The life that you and I have as born-again believers, the life that you and I have right now is the best it can be for you. The life that you and I have right now is the best it can be for you. When God says, God works all things for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose, God works all things for the good of those who love him. You know what you and I assume? You and I assume, and I have been assuming, God will work for my good. In the future, he will work for my future good. Life right now sucks. I don't like this, right? But I'm gonna suck it up. I'm gonna just go through it, and in the end, later on, in the future, maybe 10 years from now, hopefully earlier, right? He will be working for my good. But the Bible does not say that. God works. It doesn't say God will work. God works. God is working right now for your own good, your current good, of all the things that are happening around you, so that it's what's best for you now. It's a revolutionary thinking. It changed your whole perspective on everything. Because what are we thinking, right? Oh, God, only if that wasn't there in my life. Only if I could get there, like, on that next level, then my life would be set. So that's what you're working toward, right? I'm suffering now, but I'll eventually get there. That good that I want, the person, the marriage, or whatever, right? The pain-freeness, that's what's really good. I want to get there. Get me there. But until then, I'm just going to suck it up. I just trust that I will get it. God is saying, no. With all those things going on right now, with the pain, with the thorn in your heart, that is what's best for you. Because if it weren't for that, you'd be worse off. That is why God gave thorn, right, on the side to Paul. Because if it weren't for that, Paul didn't like it, remove this, and God says, your grace, my grace is sufficient for you, my grace is, what he's saying is, no, that's my grace. That's the best thing that I can do for you right now. That is the best. If I were to remove it, you would become so proud that you lose it all. This came to me, and one night, right, as I was reading about these pastors, Big time pastors are about my age, about mid-40s, right? And their congregation is huge, like 20,000, 40,000, right? And some of them you know. And I've been following them, I've been reading their books, right? And almost as if they promised to one another, like one by one, they got fired from their own church that they started maybe 15, 20 years ago. And these are mega church pastors that have written books, right? One by one that I admire them. I even secretly envy them. God, why aren't you blessing my church like these people, like these pastors? What's up, right? What about me? What's good about them? The reason why they got fired, because they're domineering, because of their proud, because of the way they use money, thinking that it's all really their money. They're the ones who built it, right? They can use the money any way they want. And they got fired, right? Now they are putting, you know, shame on the face of Jesus. And it dawned on me, God, all this time I've been resentful secretly, asking, like, why aren't you blessing me like you blessed them? But I realized, wow, if you had blessed me like you did then that might have been what happened to me, right? So this small church, right, this barrier was actually good for me so that I won't be proud, that I won't have all this money to control because of my God's. This was actually for my good. It is His grace that He has provided for me that I am where I am. And so that is why I'm making the statement that the life that you have right now, if you're a child of God right now, is the best life for you. Until you accept that, you won't have true peace in your life. You won't have true joy until you accept that. One person put it this way. You will never really enjoy other people. You will never have stable emotions. You will never lead a life of godly contentment. You will never conquer jealousy and love others as you should until you thank God for making you the way He did. Accepting the way God has made you. Not only just your physical you, but your circumstances and everything. Some people think when you accept that, you won't work hard at all. Right? That you won't put in the effort to know God. I completely disagree. Now you're making the effort, not because of fear. Oh, if I don't lose, God's gonna punish me. Fear, now you're working out of love. Love beats fear every single time. My house catches fire and my children are in there. It's not the fear that makes me jump in there to save my kids, because if I don't, the police is going to come and knock me up. No. It's my love that makes me go into the house and keep my life to save my children because of my love. Love thwarts fear every single time, and it makes us work harder than anything else if we want to become like Him. Savior who has accepted us even though we made so many mistakes, and He's working everything for our good in His wisdom. Even the bad things that we thought were bad, that undesirable, they are actually for our good. How awesome God is. So God in His wisdom placed you exactly where you should be for your good, where you are. And what you have now is what is best for you. You are a child of God. That's better.